Wearing a blue gown with a long bib apron to keep her clothes clean, she looks more like Alice at the Mad Hatter's Tea Party than most of the illustrations I've seen. It's enough to make me physically sick. At first, I think she's talking to the nurse, until the woman stands to greet us, smoothing out her peppermint scrubs. Allison doesn't notice, too intent on the metal vase of carnations in front of her. My nausea escalates when I hear the carnations talking over the drone of white noise in the background. They're saying how painful it is to be snipped at the stems, complaining about the quality of the water they're swimming in, asking to be put back into the ground so they can die in peace. That's what I hear anyway. I have to wonder what Allison thinks they're saying in her own warped mind. The doctor can't get details, and I've never brought it up because it would mean admitting I inherited her sickness. Dad waits for the nurse, but his gaze, heavy with longing and disappointment, stays locked on Allison. A slight pressure on my right arm shifts my attention to the unnaturally tan face of Nurse Mary Jenkins. The scent radiating off her is a mix of burned toast and talcum powder. Her brown hair is pulled up in a bun, and a white, high-voltage smile nearly singes my vision.
"Howdy ha!" she sings.
As usual, she's over-the-top bubbly, like Mary Poppins. She studies my crutches.
"Yikes! Did you hurt yourself, honey drop?"
"No, I've sprouted wooden appendages." "Skateboard," I answer, determined to be on my best behavior for Dad's sake, in spite of how the yammering flowers on the table have gotten under my skin.
"Still skateboarding? Such an interesting hobby."
Her pitying stare implies for a girl, better than words ever could. She studies my blue dreadlocks and thick eye makeup with a grim expression on her face.
"You need to keep in mind that a calamity like this can upset your mother."
I'm not sure if she's talking about my injuries or my fashion sense. The nurse looks over her shoulder at Allison, who's still whispering to the flowers, oblivious to us.
"She's already a little high-strung today. I should give her something."
Nurse Poppin' Stuff starts to pull a syringe from the arsenal in her pocket, one of the many things I despise about her. She seems to enjoy giving her patients shots. Over the years, the doctors have discovered that sedatives work best to control Allison's outbursts, but they turn her into a drooling zombie, unaware of anything around her. I'd rather see her alert and conversing with a roach than like that. I scowl at my dad, but he doesn't even notice because he's so busy frowning himself.
"No,"
he says, and the deep disciplinarian edge to his voice makes the nurse's penciled-in eyebrows snap up.
"I'll send Alyssa for you if things get difficult. And we've got the gardeners over there for manpower if we need it."
He gestures to the two hulking men in the distance who are pruning some branches from a bush. They could be twins with their huge mustaches and walrus-shaped bodies stuffed in brown coveralls.
"All righty-o, I'll be at the front desk when you need me."
With another glaringly fake smile, she bounces into the building, leaving the three of us in solitude. Or the eight of us, if you count the carnations. At least they've finally stopped talking. The minute Dad's shadow glides across the vase, Allison looks up. One glance at my crutches, and she launches from her seat, rattling the tea set.
"He was right!"
"Who was right, hon?"
Dad asks, smoothing back the loose hairs framing her temples. Even after all the years of disappointment, he still can't resist touching her.
"The grasshopper!"
Allison's blue eyes glitter with a mix of anxiety and excitement as she points to a thick web in the parasol's ribs. A silver dollar-sized garden spider scuttles across it, securing a white cocoon against the gusting wind. Dinner, no doubt.
"Before the spider wrapped him up, the grasshopper shouted something."
Allison's hands clench together in front of her waist.
"The grasshopper said you'd been hurt, Allie. He saw you outside the skating place."
I stare at the mummified lump in the spider's web. There was that insect that kept climbing my leg at Underworld. What, did it hitch a ride on the car?
My stomach turns over. No way. No possible way it's the same bug. Allison must have overheard me and Dad talking to the nurse about my fall. Sometimes I think she pretends to be oblivious because it's easier than facing what's happening to her, or what she's done to our family.
She grips her hands so hard, the knuckles bulge white. Ever since the day she hurt me, she avoids any physical contact between us. She thinks I'll break. That's one of the reasons I wear gloves, so she won't see the scars and be reminded. Dad pries her hands apart and laces his fingers through hers. Allison's attention settles on him, and the chaotic intensity melts away.
"Hi, Tommy Toes," she says, her voice soft and steady.
"Hi, Allie Bear."
"You brought ice cream. Is this a date?"
"Yeah."
He kisses her knuckles, flashing his best Elvis smirk.
"And Alyssa's here to help us celebrate."
"Perfect." She smiles back, her eyes dancing. No wonder Dad's helplessly in love with her. She's pretty enough to be a fairy. Dad helps her back to her chair. He lays a cloth napkin in her lap, then slops some drippy ice cream into a teacup. Placing the cup on a saucer, he eases it in front of her along with a plastic spoon.
"Il tuo gelato, signora bella," he says.
"Grazie, meatball," she bursts, in a rare moment of levity. Dad laughs and she giggles, a tinkling sound that makes me think of the silver chimes we have over our back door at home. For the first time in a while, she feels like home. I start to think this is going to be one of our good visits. With everything going on in my life lately, it would sure be nice to have a moment of stability. I sit, and Dad takes my crutches, laying them on the ground, then helps me prop my ankle on an empty chair between Allison and me. He pats my shoulder and takes a seat on the opposite side. For several minutes, we laugh and sip sticky cheesecake soup from our teacups. We talk about normal things. The end of the school year, tonight's prom, last night's graduation, and Tom's sporting goods. It's like I'm in a regular family. Then Dad ruins it. He takes out his wallet to show Allison snapshots of my mosaics that won ribbons at the county fair. The three photos are stuck in the plastic sleeves, along with an assortment of credit cards and receipts. First is murderous moonlight, all in blues. Blue butterflies, blue flowers, and bits of blue glass. Then, autumn's last breath. A whirlwind of fall colors made up of brown moths, orange, yellow, and red flower petals. Winter's heartbeat, my pride, is a chaotic tangle of baby's breath and silvery glass beads arranged in the image of a tree. Dried winter berries dot the end of each branch, as if the tree is bleeding. Jet black crickets form the backdrop. As morbid as it sounds, the mixing of bizarre and natural somehow creates beauty. Allison wriggles in her chair, as if disturbed.
"What about her music? Is she still practicing her cello?"
Dad squints my way. Allison's had very little to do with my education, but one thing she's always insisted on is my participation in orchestra. Maybe because she used to play the cello herself. I dropped out this year when I only had time for one elective. We haven't mentioned it because it seems so important to her that I continue.
"We can talk about that later,"
Dad says, squeezing her hand.
"I wanted you to see her eye for detail, just like you with your photographs."
"Photographs tell a story," Allison mutters. "But people forget to read between the lines."
Breaking her hand out of Dad's, she becomes deathly quiet. Eyes filled with sadness, Dad's about to close the wallet, when Allison spots the air freshener with the moth's picture, the one he hasn't yet hung in his truck. With trembling hands, she grabs it.
Why are you carrying this with you?
Mom.
My tongue strains with the effort to form the word, unnatural and stiff, like trying to twist a cherry's stem into a knot.
I had it made for him. It's a way to keep a part of you with us.
Jaw clenched, she turns to Dad. I told you to keep that album hidden, didn't I? She was never supposed to see this. It's only a matter of time now.
It's only a matter of time till what? I end up here where she is? Does she think the photographs made her crazy?
Frowning, she tosses the air freshener across the table. Her tongue clucks a steady rhythm. The sound snaps inside me, as if someone is plucking my intestines with a guitar pick. Her most violent outbursts always start with the tongue click. Dad stiffens his fingers around the air freshener, wary. A fly alights on my neck, tickling me. When I swat it away, it lands beside Allison's fingers. It rubs its tiny legs together.
He's here. He's here.
Its whispers rise above the wind and the rest of the white noise, above Allison's clucking tongue and Dad's cautious breaths. Allison leans toward the bug.
No, he can't be here.
Who can't be here, Allie Bear?
Dad asks. I stare, wondering if it's possible. Do crazy people share delusions? Because that's the only explanation for Allison and me hearing the exact same thing. Unless the fly really did talk.
He rides the wind,
it whispers once more, then flits off into the courtyard. Allison locks me in her frantic gaze. I tense, stunned.
Hun, what's wrong?
Dad stands next to her now, his hand on her shoulder. What does that mean? He rides the wind. Who? I ask Allison, no longer caring about giving my secret away to her. She glares at me, intense and silent. Dad watches both of us, looking paler by the second.
Dad?
I lean across my propped-up leg and tug at my sock. Could you get some ice for my foot? It's throbbing. He scowls.
Can't it wait a second, Alyssa?
Please, it hurts.
Yes, she's hurt.
Allison reaches over and touches my ankle. The gesture is so shocking, so normal and nurturing, it chills my blood and bones. Allison is touching me. For the first time in 11 years. The monumental event rattles Dad so much, he leaves without another word. I can tell by the twitch in his left eyelid that he'll be bringing Poppin' Fresh back with him. Allison and I don't have long. The minute he vanishes through the door, I jerk my leg off the chair, wincing against a jolt of pain in my ankle.
The fly! We both heard the same thing, right?
Allison's cheeks pale.
How long have you heard the voices?
What difference does it make?
All the difference. I could have told you things. Things to keep you from making the wrong choice.
Tell me now.
She shakes her head. Maybe she's not convinced I hear the same voices she does.
The carnations. We should honor their last request.
I pick up a plastic spoon and carnations in hand, hop on one crutch to the edge of the cement courtyard where the landscaping begins. The earth smells damp and fresh. The sprinklers have been on recently. Allison follows close behind. I don't see the walrus gardeners anymore. In the distance, the shed door is open. The men must be inside. Good. There's no one to interrupt us. Allison takes the flowers and spoon and drops to her knees. She uses the spoon to burrow into the soft earth. When the plastic snaps, she digs with her fingers until there's a shallow grave. She lays the blossoms within and rakes dirt back over the top. The expression on her face is like a sky filled with churning clouds, undecided whether to storm or dissipate. My legs waver. For so many years, the women in our family have been pegged as crazy. But we're not. We can hear things other people can't. That's the only way we could both hear the fly and Carnation say the same thing. The trick is not to talk back to the insects and flowers in front of normal people, because then we appear crazy. We're not crazy. I should be relieved. But something else is going on. Something unbelievable. If the voices are real, it still makes no sense that Allison insists on dressing like Alice. Why she clucks her tongue. Why she rages for no reason. Those things make her look crazier than anything else. There are so many questions I want to ask. I shove them aside, because one other question is most binding of all. Why our family? I ask. Why does this keep happening to us? Allison's face sours. It's a curse. A curse? Is it possible? I think of the strange website I found when I searched for the moth. Are we cursed with mystical powers like those netherlings I read about? Is that why my grandmother Alicia attempted flight? She tried to test the theory? All right, I say, making an effort to believe the impossible. Who am I to argue? I've been chatting it up with dandelions and doodlebugs for the past 6 years. Real magic must be better than being schizophrenic. If it's a curse, there's a way to break it.
Yes.
Allison's answer is a croak of misery. The wind picks up, and her braid slaps around her like a whip. What is it, then? I ask. Why haven't we already done it? Allison's eyes glaze over. She's withdrawn somewhere inside herself, a place she hides when she's scared. Allison! I bend over to grip her shoulders. She refocuses.
Because we'd have to go down the rabbit hole.
I don't even ask if the rabbit hole is real. Then I'll find it. Maybe someone in your family can help? It's a stretch. None of the British Liddells even know about us. One of Alice's sons had a secret affair with some woman before he went off to World War I and died on the battlefield. The woman ended up pregnant and came to America to raise their love child. The boy grew up and had a daughter, my grandma Alicia. We haven't been in touch with any of them. Ever. No. Allison's voice pinches.
Keep them out of this, Allie. They don't know any more than we do, or we wouldn't still be in this mess.
The determination behind her expression shuts down any questions her cryptic statement might raise. Fine. We know the rabbit hole is in England, right? Is there a map? Some kind of written directions? Where do I look?
You don't.
I jump as she pulls down my sock to expose the birthmark above my swollen left ankle. She has an identical one on her inner wrist. The mark is like a maze made of sharply angled lines that you might see in a puzzle book.
There's so much more to the story than anyone knows, she says. The treasures will show you.
Treasures? She presses her birthmark to mine, and a warm sensation rushes between the points of contact.
Read between the lines,
she whispers. The same thing she said earlier about the photographs.
You can't lose your head, Allie. Promise you'll let this go.
My eyes burn. But I want you home. She jerks back from my ankle.
No, I didn't do all of this for nothing.
Her voice cracks, and she looks so tiny and frail at my feet. I ache to ask what she means, but even more, I just want to hug her. I lower myself to my knees, ignoring the wound behind Jeb's bandana as I lean in. It's heaven feeling her arms around me, smelling her shampoo as I bury my nose at her temple. It doesn't last. She stiffens and pushes me away. A familiar jab of rejection scrapes through my chest. Then I remember. Dad and the nurse will be back at any second. The moth, I say. It plays a part in this, right? I found a website. The picture of the black and blue moth led me to it. Overhead, clouds dim the sunlight to a grayish haze, and Allison's skin reflects the change. Terror sharpens her gaze. You've done it now. She lifts trembling hands. Now that you've gone looking for him, he won't be breaking his word. Not technically. You're fair game. I lace my fingers through hers, trying to ground her. You're freaking me out. Who are you talking about? He'll come for you. He'll step through your dreams, or the looking glass. Stay away from the glass, Allie. Do you understand? Mirrors? I ask, incredulous. You want me to stay away from mirrors? She scrambles to her feet, and I struggle to balance on my crutch. Broken glass severs more than skin. It will sever your identity. As if on cue, Jeb's bandana slips from my knee, revealing the bloody bandage. A tiny yelp leaps from her mouth. There's no tongue clock to warn me before she lunges. My back slams against the ground. The air is pushed from my lungs, and pain bursts between my shoulder blades. Allison straddles me, peeling off my gloves as tears stream down her cheeks. He made me hurt you, she sobs. I won't let it happen again. I've heard her say those words before, and in an instant, I'm back in that place and time. A 5-year-old child, innocent, oblivious, watching as a spring storm gathered outside the screen door. The scent of rain and wet dirt rolled over me, making my mouth water. Right against my nose, a moth landed on the screen, the size of a crow, with a luminous body and wings like black satin. I squealed and it took flight, hovering, teasing me, asking me to play. Lightning flashed, a flood of light. Mommy always told me it wasn't safe to go outside when it's storming. But the moth fluttered, beautiful, taunting, promising it would be all right. I piled up some books to reach the lock on the latch and tumbled outside to dance with the bug in the flower beds, mud squishing between my toes. Mommy's scream made me look up. She sprinted toward us with a set of pruning shears. Off with your head, she yelled, and snipped every flower where the moth perched, cutting the petals from their stems. I followed, hypnotized by her energy as rain pelted us and lightning torched the sky. I thought she was dancing, and flung my arms in the air behind her. Then I tripped over my feet. White petals were bleeding on the ground. Daddy came running out of the house. I told him we needed band-aids for the daffodils. He gasped at the sight of me. I was too young to understand that flowers don't bleed. Somehow, I'd gotten into the line of fire, and the pruning shears sliced my skin, from my palms to my wrists. The doctor said I didn't feel the pain because of shock. That was the last time Allison lived at home, and the last time I called her mommy. A clap of thunder snatches me back to the present. My heart hammers against my sternum. I'd forgotten about the moth. That bug was my secret pet as a child and the catalyst for my scars. No wonder its photograph seemed familiar to me. No wonder it made Allison go crazy to see it again. She wails, holding my bare palms up to the dim light. I'm so, so sorry. He used me, and I failed you. You're meant for so much more than this. We all are. She rolls off me and digs up the carnations. Dirt crumbles from the stems as she stands. He can't have her. You tell him that. Allison squeezes the petals into a clump between her fists, as if trying to strangle them. Then she tosses the tattered blossoms aside and stumbles over to the gazing globe, trying to shove it off its base. When it won't budge, she pounds the ball with her fists. I grab her elbows, worried she'll hurt herself. "Please stop," I plead.
"Do you hear me?" she shouts at the silver globe, jerking out of my hold. "You can't have her!"
Something moves in the reflection, a blur of a shadow. But on a second glance, it's only Allison's image staring back, yelling so hard the veins in her neck bulge. What happens next is like a dream. The clouds swirl overhead. Rain starts pounding down. I watch through the downpour as, in slow motion, the wind whips her braid around her neck. A hacking cough shakes her throat, and she doubles over, fingers clenched around the braid to loosen it.
"Allison!"
I leap toward her. It barely registers that my ankle no longer hurts. Allison falls to the muddying earth, gasping for breath. The rain falls harder, as if someone's pelting pebbles at us. Her dirt-caked fingernails gouge at the platinum cord strangling her. In her desperation, she rips some skin from her neck. Blood rises along the welts. Her eyeballs bulge, snapping from side to side as she struggles to inhale. Her house shoes slap against the muddy ground.
"Alice," she hisses, unable to talk.
I'm crying so hard I can't see my fingers as I wrestle against the braid. Lightning strikes in the distance, once, twice. Then the plaited cords tighten around my fingers and tangle me up, a pressure so intense I fear my knuckles will snap. My fingers pop into place against my will and squeeze her neck. Something is trying to make me kill my mom. Nausea, hot and vicious, rips through my stomach.
No!
The more I struggle to free both of us, the more deeply interlocked we become. The yarn dreadlocks cling to my neck like a wet mop. Rain and tears bleed into my eyeshadow, and black droplets smudge Allison's dirty apron.
"Let go!" I shout at her hair.
"Stop, Allie."
Her plea is hollow and hissing, like air escaping a tire. The braid squeezes my fingers again.
"I'm sorry," I whisper, sobbing. "I'm not trying to hurt you."
Thunder rolls through my bones, the taunting laugh of some dark demon. No matter how hard I pull, the strands embed me deeper and tighten around her neck. Her hands go limp. She turns blue, eyes lolling up until the irises disappear.
"Somebody help!"
The scream strains my lungs. The gardeners come running. Two sets of meaty hands curl around me from behind, and just like that, the braid releases. Allison sucks in a deep, raspy breath, filling her lungs and coughing. I go limp as one of the gardeners holds me up. Nurse Jenkins hovers into view, syringe in hand. Dad's right behind, and I slump into his arms.
I didn't,
I stutter.
I wouldn't, not ever.
"I know."
Dad hugs me.
"You were trying to keep her from hurting herself."
His embrace makes my sopping clothes stick to my skin.
"But it wasn't Allison," I murmur.
"Of course not,"
Dad whispers against my head.
"It wasn't her. Your mom hasn't been herself for years."
I suppress the urge to throw up. He doesn't get it. She wasn't trying to strangle herself. The wind controlled her braid. But what sane person would ever believe that? Just before Allison's eyes flutter closed, she mumbles something with a drunken stammer.
"The daisies are hiding treasure. Buried treasure."
Then she's oblivious, a drooling zombie, and I'm left alone to face the storm. Chapter 4. Butterfly Threads. It takes so long to get Allison settled at the asylum,
Dad has to drive me straight to work. We pull up to the curb at the only vintage clothing shop in Pleasance. It's nestled in a popular strip mall along the commerce side of downtown. A bistro on one side of the shop, a jewelry store on the other. Tom's Sporting Goods is across the way.
Remember, I'll be at work. Just one quick call and I'll take you home.
Dad's frown forms wrinkles at the edge of his mouth. I'm numb, still wondering if I imagined it all. I stare past the pink brick storefront and black wrought iron fence. My gaze focuses and unfocuses on the curvy black letters over the door. Butterfly Threads. I hold the Moth air freshener at my nose. The scent reminds me of spring, outdoor hikes, and happy families. But winter is all I feel inside, and my family is more screwed up than we've ever been. I want to tell Dad that Allison's delusions are real, but without proof, he'll just think my sanity is splintering too.
You don't have to do this,
he says, taking my other hand. Even through my gloves, his touch feels like ice.
It's only 2 hours,
I answer, hoarse from all my screaming in the courtyard.
Jen can't get anyone to cover her shift on short notice, and Persephone's out of town.
Friday is our boss Persephone's scavenger day, when she commutes to nearby towns to haunt estate and garage sales in search of merchandise. Contrary to what Dad thinks, I'm not being a martyr. From 3 o'clock to 5 is the dead zone at work. Hardly any customers show up until after rush hour. I plan to use that time to search the store computer for the Moth website.
I should go.
I squeeze Dad's hand. He nods. I open his glove box to put the air freshener inside, and an avalanche of papers hit my feet. A pamphlet on top catches my eye. The background is peaceful pink, with a generic white font printed across the front. ECT. Why electroconvulsive therapy is right for you or your loved one. I pick it up.
What is this?
Dad bends across the seat to put away the other papers.
We'll talk about it later.
Dad, please.
He stiffens and glances out his window.
They had to give her another dose of sedatives while you were in the lounge.
The words punch me. I was too chicken to follow when they wheeled Allison to the padded cell. I cowered on a couch in the lounge, pulling out my ruined dreadlocks like a robot while I watched some stupid reality show on TV. Reality. I don't even know what that is anymore.
Did you hear me, Allie? 2 doses in less than an hour. All these years they've been drugging her into oblivion.
He squeezes the steering wheel.
Yet she's getting worse. She was screaming about rabbit holes and moths and people losing their heads. The drugs aren't working. So the doctors have offered this option.
My tongue absorbs my saliva like a sponge.
If you'll look at the first paragraph,
he points at some numbers on the pamphlet.
The practice has been making a comeback since...
They used eels, you know, I interrupt a little too loudly. In the old days, wrapped them around the patient's head. An electric turban. The words are senseless, mirroring how I feel inside. All I can think of are my pets at home. I learned early on that I couldn't have the traditional cat or dog. It's not that animals talk to me, only insects and plants are on my frequency. But every time Janara's tabby caught a roach and gnawed it to death, I got nauseated listening to the bug's screams. So I settled for eels. They're elegant and mystical and use a shock organ to stun their prey. It's a quiet and dignified death. Similar to the bugs dying by asphyxiation in my traps. Still, I won't touch their water without a pair of rubber gloves. I can't imagine what they could do to someone's brain.
Allie, This isn't the same as what they did 70 years ago. It's done with electrodes, while the patient is anesthetized. Muscle relaxants keep them oblivious to any pain.
Brain damage is still a side effect.
No.
He reads the upside-down text aloud.
Almost all ECT patients will experience confusion, inability to concentrate, and short-term memory loss, but the benefits outweigh the temporary discomforts.
He meets my gaze, his left eye twitching.
Short-term memory loss is a discomfort, not brain damage.
It's a form of brain damage. I haven't been the daughter of a mental patient for the past 11 years and not picked up on the definitions and levels of psychological anomalies.
Well, maybe that would be a blessing, considering your mom's most recent memories consist of nothing but the asylum and an endless procession of drugs and psych evaluations.
The deep lines around his mouth look like they might crack all the way through to his skull. What I wouldn't give to see his Elvis smirk right about now. My throat constricts. Who are you to decide this for her? His lips tighten to that stern expression, reserved for when I've overstepped my boundaries.
I'm a man who loves his wife and daughter. A man who's tired down to his bones.
The mix of defensiveness and resignation in his brown eyes makes me want to curl up and cry.
She tried to kill herself right in front of you. Even if it is a physical impossibility for her to choke herself, it doesn't matter. The meds aren't working. We have to take the next step.
And if this doesn't work, what then? A lobotomy with a can opener? I throw the pamphlet across the seat. It hits his thigh.
Allie.
His voice sharpens. I see right through him. He's desperate to get Allison back, but not for me. All these years he's been pining for her. The woman he used to take to drive-in movies. Who waded with him through puddles in the gutters after it rained. Who drank lemonade on the porch swing and shared dreams for a happy future. If he does this, she may never be that woman again. I shove open the door and drop down onto the sidewalk. Even though the late afternoon sun has found its way through the clouds, a chill coats my entire body.
At least let me get your crutches for you.
Dad starts to dig them out from behind the passenger seat. I don't need them anymore.
But Jeb said you sprained.
Newsflash, Dad. Jeb's not always right. I tug at the bandana covering my bandage. My ankle hasn't hurt since Allison pressed her birthmark to mine. In fact, my scraped knee seems better, too. Chalk it up to more unexplained weirdness. I don't have time to wonder about it. I've got bigger issues. Dad glances off into the distance, his jaw tight.
Butterfly.
Don't call me that, I snap. His face falls as two chatty shoppers walk by. The last thing I want to do is hurt him. He's stayed by Allison's side for years, not to mention raised me all alone. I'm sorry. I lean in to see him better. Let's just do more research, okay? He sighs.
I signed the papers before we left.
My mask of understanding slips, anger seeping out the edges. Why would you do that?
The doctor offered this as an option months ago. I've been looking into it for a while. At first, I couldn't bring myself to even entertain the idea. But now... They're starting Monday. You can go with me to visit her afterward.
An uncomfortable heat glides up my neck. The humidity from the storm and the white noise of surrounding bugs only make it worse.
Please try to understand,
Dad says,
how much I need her home again.
I need her too.
Then won't you do whatever it takes to make that happen?
Inside me, the flapping shadow comes to life again. It dares me to say exactly what I'm thinking. Yeah, I'd even dive down a rabbit hole.
I slam the door. Dad taps the horn, no doubt wanting an explanation for my remark. I rush into the shop without looking back. The automatic doorbell chirps, and a gust jingles the crystal teardrop chandelier centered in the ceiling. I stand there, dazed while the air conditioning ices my damp clothes. The rich coconut scent of the candles and the candelabras along the walls eases the crimp in my stomach.
Is that you, Al?
Jannara's muffled voice carries through the storeroom's open door. I clear my throat and grip the air freshener. In my rush to escape, I forgot to leave it in the truck.
Uh-huh. Did you see my prom dress? It's on the new merchandise rack.
I lift the only hanger on the rack. The clear plastic cover crinkles. Jen bought 2 dresses at Butterfly Threads months ago. She sliced and diced them to create a fitted lime halter bodice that flares into a mini zebra print slash pink netting combo. Hand-sewn iridescent sequins catch the light as I hang it back on the rod.
Nice, I say.
It's actually amazing, and under normal circumstances, I'd be a lot more enthusiastic over one of her fashion creations. But I can't find the strength today. I toss the moth air freshener under the checkout counter next to Jannara's makeup bag. It lands on top of Persephone's mythology tomes. A sense of someone watching slides through my bones, and I look over my shoulder at the poster on the wall. It's from a movie called The Crow. Persephone's in love with the hero. Black leather, white face, black eye makeup, and a perpetual brooding scowl. There was some mystery surrounding the actor. He died on set while filming. I've always been drawn to the poster. Even on a flat piece of paper, the guy has the most soulful eyes. Eyes that seem to know me, just like I know them. Although I've never seen the movie, he's familiar, to the point that I can smell the leather swaddling his body, feel the slickness against my cheek.
He's here.
I jump as the words rush my ears, the same ones the fly said earlier. Only it's not a whisper this time, not the white noise I'm used to. It's a guy's deep Cockney accent. Mirrors line the side walls of the store, and a blur of movement races across them. When I look closer, the reflections show nothing but my own image.
He rides the wind.
The voice hums through my blood. A gust of cold air comes out of nowhere and snuffs out the candles, leaving only the afternoon light and the chandelier overhead. I scramble backward until I hit the counter. The poster's bottomless eyes follow my every move, as if he's the one talking to my mind and turning the wind. Icy tingles run through my spine.
Al!
Jen's shout breaks the spell.
Can you help me carry some stuff? We need to put up the Dark Angel display before I leave.
I force myself to break the poster's hypnotic gaze and head for the storeroom. The air conditioner clicks off. The gust must have come from the vents. I laugh nervously. I'm tired, hungry, and in shock. My delusions are real and my family's cursed. That's all. It should be easy to accept, right? Wrong. My soggy Skechers squish with each step along the black and white checked tiles. Jannara meets me in the doorway, arms stacked so high with clothes and props she can't see over them.
So, my dress is nice?
Her question drifts from behind the stack.
Way to pull out all the stops for your BFF's ego.
It's awesome. Brett will love it. Still feeling the poster's eyes, I balance on tiptoe and take the blue wig and miniature fog machine from the top of her armful.
As if it matters, she says from behind the swaying stack. Did I tell you Jeb threatened to turn Brett into a smashed pumpkin if I don't get home by midnight? Taking a sweet fairy tale like Cinderella and twisting it into a death threat. That's seriously warped.
Yeah, he's been on a roll lately. Everything starts to slide from her tower.
I grab several props from the top of the pile, revealing her face. Her heavily lined green eyes bulge when she sees me.
Oh my holy shiz! You look like you duked it out with a Sasquatch! Did you and Jeb settle things in a mud pit?
Ha. Leading the way to the display window, I drop my stuff in the window next to Window Waif, Persephone's mannequin. Jannara sets some sooty feathered wings atop the props pile. They sparkle with black sequins.
Seriously, what happened? I thought you were going to visit your mom.
Hey, Jen touches my arm.
Did something go wrong?
Several tendrils of dark pink hair have fallen from her upswept do. The strands coil like pink flames over her black tube dress, bringing back what they did to Allison's hair at the asylum. She lost it, I blurt. Attacked me. All other details clog my throat. How they shaved her hair so she wouldn't try to choke herself again, though now I suspect it was preparation for her shock treatments. How they kept wiping slobber from the sides of her mouth and put her into adult diapers, because when you're heavily sedated, you don't have control of your faculties. And worst of all, how they took her to the padded cell in a wheelchair, hunched and wrapped in a straitjacket like a withered old woman. That's why I couldn't follow and say goodbye. I'd already seen enough.
Oh, Al.
Jen's voice is low and soft. She pulls me in for a hug. The citrusy bubblegum scent of her shampoo comforts me.
I'll do my own makeup and stuff here. Go home.
I can't. I tug her closer. I don't want to be around things that remind me of her. Not yet.
But you shouldn't be alone.
The doorbell chirps and three ladies wander inside. Jen and I step back. I won't be alone, I answer. Not during business hours. Jen tilts her head, sizing me up.
Look, I can stay for another half hour. Go get yourself together. I'll take care of the customers.
You sure? She flicks a tangle of my hair.
Sure and absolute. Can't leave you in charge of the place looking like a circus clown reject. What if a hot guy comes in?
I attempt a smile.
Take my makeup bag, she says. I have some more hair extensions you can use.
I pick through my layaway stuff in the storeroom, grabbing a pair of platform boots along with the clothes, then duck into the tiny bathroom. The vent above the sink blows frosted air over my skin. A fluorescent glow from the tiny light fixture distorts my reflection. I brush out my tangles and clip on Jannara's purple dreadlocks. Most of my makeup has been cried and rained off, leaving smudge tracks on my face. Now all I see is Allison. But if I look deeper, it's me, wearing a straitjacket and an eel turban, grimacing like the Cheshire Cat as I sip pot roast from a teacup. How long do I have before the curse kicks in for real? I lean against the sink, untie Jeb's bandana, and breathe him in. Before this afternoon, all I wanted was to go to London to hang with him and earn college credits. Amazing the difference a few hours can make. If I don't find a way to England to look for the rabbit hole, Allison's brain gets fried and I end up where she is in a few years. There's no way I can get enough money for airfare before Monday, not to mention a passport. Gritting my teeth, I peel away my torn leggings and bandage. The split in my knee is almost healed, and there's not even a scab. I'm too exhausted and frazzled to guess why. I turn on the cold water and scrub at the physical reminders of what happened, drying my skin and underclothes with the hairdryer. Once I line my eyes with strokes of dark green and wriggle into some purple, green, and red plaid tights, I top it off with a miniskirt over fluffy red petticoats. A green cap-sleeve tee layered under a red bustier, along with a pair of purple fingerless gloves, and I'm ready to face the customers. I cast a final glance at the mirror.
Something moves behind my image. Shimmery and black, like the feathered wings in the prop pile.
Allison's warped warning skitters through me.
He'll come for you. He'll step through your dreams. Or the looking glass. Stay away from the glass.
Yelping, I whip around. Nothing's there but my shadow. The room seems to shrink, small and off balance, as if I'm stuck inside a box tumbling down a hill. My stomach bounces. I burst into the dimly lit storeroom and almost trip over the laces of my shin-high boots in a panicked race to get back to Jen. She rushes to meet me.
Jeez.
She leads me to the bar stool behind the checkout counter.
You look like your head's going to pop. Have you had anything to eat?
Ice cream soup, I mumble, relieved the customers already left and didn't see my entrance. I'm shaking all over. Jen feels my forehead.
You don't feel warm. Maybe your blood sugar's screwy. I'm getting you something from the bistro.
Don't leave. I grab her arm.
Why not? I'll be right back.
Realizing how crazy I sound, I change tactics.
The window display, we have to...
The explanation stalls on my tongue as I notice she's already finished it.
Oh. Yeah, oh.
Jen eases my fingers off her sleeve.
I relit the candles, too. Why'd you blow them out? You need all the relaxing vibes you can get. I'm going to bring you a croissant and a drink. Something decaffeinated. Never seen you this wired.
She's across the room before I can respond. The door swings shut behind her, leaving me alone with her window display. A blue wig and a clingy black angel costume hug Window Waif's form. The giant wings are strapped into place around the mannequin's shoulders with a matching leather harness. Black sequins glitter on the feathers, and smoke pours out of the miniature fog machine, snaking around the macabre scene. Somehow, those wings and the smoke belong together. I think of my moth friend. Why was Allison chasing it with the shears? Just because it lured me outside in a storm? It had to be something deeper, some kind of ongoing animosity, but I can't quite grasp it. Reluctantly, I turn to face the poster. His dark eyes look straight at me, piercing.
You know, don't you? I whisper. You have the answers.
Silence. I snort, a hollow, lonely sound. I'm officially losing it. Whispering bugs and flowers are bad enough. Expecting a poster to answer? That makes me asylum worthy. Trembling, I move to the computer on the other side of the register and find the site from earlier. I scroll past everything I've already seen, trying to find a connection to Allison's ravings. There's another group of pictures. A white rabbit, bony enough to be a skeleton. Flowers sporting arms, legs, and mouths dripping with blood. A walrus with something protruding from his lower half like tree roots. It's the Wonderland crew after a heavy dose of radiation poisoning. It's also a connection. In some way, the moth and these nether realm beings are tied to the Lewis Carroll tale. No wonder Grandma Alicia kept painting the story's characters on her walls. Ever since Alice, my family has been nuts. Could be she really did go down a rabbit hole and came back to tell the tale, but she was never the same after the experience. I mean, who would be? The hairs on my body lift, as if a current runs through me. After the last of the graphics, there's an antique ivy and floral border on either side of the black background, and a poem centered in a white fancy font. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe. I've seen the riddle in the original book. Notepad in hand, I scribble Wonderland at the top and copy the poem, word for word. I open a new search window to look for interpretations. One site has 4 different possible meanings. What if they're all wrong? I skim over 2 until the 3rd one catches my eye. There are illustrations alongside the words. Creatures with long, curly-cue noses digging holes beneath sundials. A sense of knowing overtakes me, and I close my eyes. Children play on the screen of my eyelids. A winged boy and a blonde girl dive into a hole beneath a statue of a child that balances a sundial on his head. I don't know where the images came from. I must have seen them in a movie, but I can't remember which one. They seem so real and so familiar. I jot down the definitions from that interpretation of the poem. According to whoever wrote it, brillig is 4 o'clock in the afternoon. A tove is a mythical creature, a mix between a badger and a lizard with a corkscrew nose. They're known for making their nests beneath sundials. Gyre and gimbal are verbs, meaning to dig into the earth like a giant screw, turning out soil until a deep tunnel is formed. In the context of the poem, the hole is being dug in a distinctive location, considering a wabe is the grass plot under a sundial. The other words aren't defined, but it's a start. According to the poem and the images in my mind, it seems that the rabbit hole could be under that little boy sundial statue. Now I just have to find it. I hop back to the Netherlings site and scroll down to see if there are any details I missed. At the bottom is a huge chunk of black space all the way to the end. No more text, no more pictures, even though there's plenty of room for them. Could be the webmaster meant to save the space for later. I'm about to exit the site and do a search on sundials in England in hopes to find a city and address, when movement in the dark background catches my attention. It's like watching a cricket swim through ink. But instead of a cricket, a simulated black moth flutters across the screen, just like the one from my past. I'm starting to think the moth is tied to everything. The little boy and girl I saw by the sundial, my family's very real curse. If only I could remember more about the insect. But my memories are blotted and misty, like looking down through clouds from dizzying heights. The animation catches my attention again. It starts at the top of the empty space. When it gets a quarter of the way down, glowing blue text appears beneath the drag of the moth's wings. Find the treasure. I read and reread until my eyes burn, shocked by the similarity to what Allison said. The daisies are hiding treasure. Buried treasure. Dad plowed the flower garden after she was first committed years ago. Destroyed it. There was nothing buried there. So what could she mean? Another line of text appears on screen. If you wish to save your mother, use the key. I shove back from the computer, heart pounding and palms sweating in my gloves. I didn't imagine it. The words are staring back at me, blinking. How is someone talking to me? How would they know about Allison, and how did they find me? I look around the empty store. I should tell someone. Dad's out of the question. He'd sign me up for shock treatments for sure. Gennaro will think it's just one of my tormentors from school playing a sick joke. But Jeb, despite the weirdness between us, I know he'll always be there for me. I'll show him the website. Just the thought of his reassuring smile, the one that says he gets me in a way no one else does, coaxes me from the brink of terror. At the sound of the doorbell, I glance up. Taylor's face looks back, and I nearly groan aloud. Her chic, shoulder-length hair glimmers gold in the sun. The words glitz and flash and everything panache are written in shimmery letters across the bag she carries. I turn again to the computer. The screen's gone blank, and an error message flashes. Hey, Alyssa. Taylor peruses the jewelry rack on her way to the counter. Any good sales today? She holds up a skull rhinestone brooch with glittery crossbone dangles. Preferably something that doesn't smell like a funeral home. Ignoring her, I search for the URL. The error message returns. I jiggle the mouse. If I can't find the site again, I'll never be able to convince Jeb what I saw was real. Taylor strolls closer. One of the straps on her designer purse slips off a sun-bronzed shoulder. Guess it doesn't matter. People like you don't care who's been wearing this stuff or how dead they are. After pausing to crinkle her nose at a shirt, she plops her shopping bag and purse on the opposite side of the counter, lithe arms propped on the edge. She was once a force on the tennis court, but when her dad never showed up for her tournaments, she gave it up. What a waste. The extra 4 inches of my boots set me almost eye level with her. Don't you have a prom to get ready for? I ask, hoping she'll leave. Her gaze gets all round and innocent. That's why I'm here. I went next door to pick up Jeb's graduation gift. I thought I'd drop it by his place this afternoon so he can wear it tonight. I don't even ask what she could possibly be getting Jeb from a jewelry store. What's this? She thrusts a hand across the counter and pulls my notes toward her. I try to grab them away, but she's too fast. Wonderland, huh? So, you're doing some research on the family rabbits? Goodbye, Taylor. I wrestle my notes back, accidentally knocking her purse to the floor in front of the counter. She doesn't bother to pick it up. Instead, her expression hardens. No goodbye yet. First, we're going to talk. The flittering presence in my brain taunts me to fight back. A surge of adrenaline kickstarts my tongue. Thanks, but I'd rather talk to a dung beetle. Taylor's eyes widen as if she's surprised by the insult. I smile. It feels good having the upper hand for once. She takes a few seconds to work up a comeback. You talk to beetles, huh? Glad to know you'll have someone to play with once Jeb's gone. And don't be thinking you can pull your wounded friend crap to keep him from moving to London with me next month. With you? My upper hand just got amputated. I feel like I did when I fell skateboarding, like I have a miner's cap spotlight on me. He hasn't told you yet. Taylor's practically beaming. I shouldn't be surprised. He's always so worried about your fragile state of mind. She leans across the counter, so her face is inches from mine. Her expensive perfume stings my nose. I'm spending senior year at a prep school in London. I've been offered a modeling contract there. My dad's renting Jeb a flat. It's win-win all around. Jeb can make connections for his art through the people I'll meet, and we can hang out at his